Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your co-hosts Matthew Davis and Matt Kupferle.
Welcome to episode 29 of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your co-host Matt Kupferle, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host Matthew Davis. Matthew, what's cooking out on the West Coast, brother?
It's beautiful out here. It's mid-60s today. The sun is shining. Got plenty of rain last week, so the pond in our backyard has filled up. The ducks are happy with that. And I've been currently working on projections, just caveman style, pen to paper, and I'm pounding them out like no other. And then I'll have to grab those and make sure we know what's going on with the whole landscape of baseball this year. But I'm excited to do this episode. We have somebody special that we're adding on, and that is Brock Miller, better known as Brockness Monster on Twitter. What's up, my dude?
Hey, what's up, guys? Happy to be here. I'm excited to be on the FTN team now. Most importantly, I'm excited to be on here talking baseball again. It's been a couple months, and I'm more than ready.
Yeah, it's exciting to have you. You and I have been buddies. We've met up at a Dodger game before, and our little family tree of fantasy sports comes from Kevin Adams and Vlad Sedler as well. And tell us just a quick little background on your previous fantasy sports history, if you will.
Yeah, so if you guys don't know me, I've been around for a few years. I always played some season long with just, you know, local friends or whatever for years, but I think this was about 2014, 2015 when DraftKings and FanDuel were pretty new. An ad popped up on MLB Trade Rumors, and I followed it through and started playing. And that's when I really started getting involved in Twitter. And so that's where I really started getting into fantasy baseball quite a bit. I was already kind of into the analytics from a Dodger blog called Mike Socha's Tragic Illness. That was started by Mike Petriello from MLB.com now. So that was a great blog to get introduced there. And so just got more and more involved with DFS. I worked with Nick. It was Project Roto was the website back then. Before that was Fantasy Trade 411. I did that for a couple years. And when he was closing up shop, that was right when Kevin was starting Elite Fantasy. So I covered DFS for Elite Fantasy for 4 years there, 3 years. And that brings me up until now. I think I'm going to be fitting in here, talking some season long with you guys, maybe do some DFS stuff. But, as the season goes on a little bit, I'm really excited. Last couple of years, I've really been getting involved in the NFBC contest. It's kind of taken over from DFS. You know, DFS was my favorite, you know, more than season long for a while there. But I think I'm enjoying the season long stuff. And, you know, my favorite part about season long is draft season. And here we are right in the middle of it.
This is the best time of year right now. We're in it. We're knee deep in it. And you're also going to be doing something with Ryan, right? Ryan Noonan?
Yeah, I we've talked about it a bit. He's got his show going. He's trying to do some things, get that thing set up to go live and do some different things. And baseball season gets a little bit closer, you know, jump in with him, possibly jumping in with John, you know, MLB moving averages from Twitter, maybe talking a little season preview with him, talking DFS, just kind of fitting in everywhere I can, you know.
Cool. Awesome. Well, we're both glad to have you. Matt, if you want to take it from here, you're more than welcome to.
Sure. Brock, glad to have you on. We're excited. It'll be fun. Like I told Matthew on our last episode, once the calendar hits February is when my excitement ratchets it up about tenfold. So I'm looking forward to it. I haven't jumped into any drafts yet, but that will be changing hopefully in the near future. So a few news and notes to get your guys' thoughts on. First of all, Colton Wong stays inside the NL Central, but much to the chagrin of Cardinals fans myself, it's not back with St. Louis. He's moving a little bit north up to Milwaukee, 2 years, $18 million. What are your guys' thoughts on Wong moving to a hitter-friendly Miller Park, and where do you see him slotting in that lineup spot?
I absolutely love it. So he's coming into his age 30 season, and he has elite defense, and that's not going to take him off the field whatsoever. And as I'm looking at the lineup and roster construction there in Milwaukee, I'm thinking he's going to either hit one or two, and that's, you know, flip-flopped with Lorenzo Cain and with Christian Yelich hitting in the three hole. And I think that right there already bodes very well for his counting stats when we've seen him, you know, hit kind of buried in that St. Louis Cardinals lineup. Every projection system pretty much has him penciled in for 15 stolen bases. And he was the 34th second baseman going in NFBC drafts. That's going to change drastically. He won't be going anywhere near that moving forward. So his min pick was 270 with a max of 417. You can throw the max out the window, and almost even the ADP at 343, he's going to be even pushed past that min that we're seeing at 270 right now. So there's going to be an aggressive approach towards him. He's going to be leading off. He should be playing every single day. The hitters going that are going to be hitting behind him with Christian Yelich and Keston Hira are just fine and dandy. So everything in between for me, I like. He provides some speed, which is a scarce category, and everybody likes to pay for that. And I would kind of project him to slide all the way up into that Nick Solak, Andrés Giménez. Well, two of them, Jonathan Villar and Andrés Giménez, I don't even know why they're going there, but I think that that's where he'll end up landing, next to former teammate Tommy Edman and Nick Solak as well.
Brock, what about you? Any thoughts on Colton Wong?
Yeah, definitely. I like the move for Wong, you know, going to Milwaukee. That's a much better ballpark for him than St. Louis is. St. Louis is actually a really tough ballpark for left-handed hitters there. So I like that for Wong. And, you know, like Matt said, it's going to be leading off there. And I am referring to a tweet from Rudy Gamble, one of our friends from Twitter there. Left-handed pitchers that he has projected for over 50 innings pitched in the National League Central: Stephen Brault, Wade Miley, and Hwang Young Kim, and Eric Lauer, if you're going to, you know, if you're going to count him from Milwaukee. So obviously they're on the same team. So, I mean, there's only three left-handed pitchers that he might be facing as far as starting pitchers go in his division there. So we're going to expect him to be leading off quite a bit. And they can even lead him off against lefties. He did that for St. Louis, and we'll see how Council plays that. So he's going to lead off quite a bit there. And another thing with Wong, you know, Matt mentioned how good his defense is there. That's a big upgrade for the Milwaukee pitchers. Keston Hira, there's a few different numbers that are out there, whichever one you want to look at. But I think they all indicated that Keston Hira was basically one of the worst defensive second basemen in baseball, last year, well, since he's come up. Replacing him with Colton Wong, you know, whether he slides over to first, maybe they move him out to left field, whatever happens there. Orlando Arcia at shortstop, here or Colton Wong at second base, and then whoever ends up at third base. I think Roster Resource has Luis Urias listed over at third base right now. That's a really good defensive infield there, and you know, the Brewers have some fly ball pitchers there. Josh Lindblom is a pretty extreme fly ball guy there. But one of the pitchers that I was looking at for Milwaukee, Adrian Hauser, is actually kind of projected to strike out almost a batter per inning. Somebody that nobody's really talking about or going after. And he's not, you know, really been great. I think he's projected like a 4.4 ERA. But if you look, his xFIP the last 2 years is like in that 3.7 range. And having a good infield defense behind him can certainly help get him to those numbers, help him realize that xFIP there. He's got a 55% ground ball rate, which is one of the five highest ground ball rates of any ball pitcher in baseball over the last 2 years there. So that infield defense, if he can, you know, keep striking out about a batter per inning there, and then get a little bit of help from that defense, maybe Adrian Hauser is somebody to take a look at.
So definitely agree with everything you guys said. Are you guys worried at all? I think his glove keeps him for sure in the lineup. There's no question to me about that. Wong has some pretty averse and downright scary lefty-lefty splits. I don't think they have any other option if you look at their bench bats. I mean, I think until we hear about a DH, you know, Keston Hira, Brock, to your point, probably slides over to first. Their middle infield looks like it's Daniel Robertson, and outside of him, unless they make another signing or bring somebody up, they don't have a whole lot. Are we worried at all that Long against lefties bats at the bottom of the order, or are they just kind of don't have any other options and he's going to hit, you know, 600 plate appearances at the top?
I think Brock touched on the lack of left-handed starting pitchers in that division, and that's kind of where you want to, you know, look at the majority of your volume there. And then the quality of it is pretty bleak as well. So I don't really have any concerns in regards to him getting shoved down in that lineup, especially if he gets into a groove early. I mean, they're just going to leave him there, especially because they just, you know, I think everything just really does bode well for him.
So let's move over to the AL. Two signings by the Twins. They're at it again. First, let's stay on the hitting side. Nelson Cruz, the timeless, ageless wonder, Nelson Cruz. 1 year, $13 million. They didn't really seem to have a whole lot, but you can always find somebody to take DH at bats. Talk about Nelson Cruz for me. And Brock, we'll start with you. You know, one of the harder things, or one of maybe the polarizing topics in fantasy baseball, is a guy like Nelson Cruz that's util only. Despite how much he smashes, some people are just super uncomfortable. Do you have, you know, thoughts on Nelson Cruz and where you like to target him in drafts?
Yeah, I'm one of those guys. I know that a vast majority of the really sharp guys on Twitter are all pretty much on board, you know, just taking the home runs, taking the RBIs, you know, taking the numbers from Nelson Cruz, from another DH guy like that. You know, personally, I look at things from a little bit through the lens of a DFS player, and there are multiple routes to win a season-long league. And for me, there's a lot more routes when I am, you know, not picking a utility player. So, you know, personally, I tend to never end up with these guys. I'm fine with them. I'm. It's not like I take a look at their projections, and I'm expecting them to not get to those numbers. I think the projections are usually fair on those guys. I just, you know, for me, it takes a lot for me to look at one of those guys and see the upside and see how it's going to hold down my roster construction and determine that, you know, it's going to help me. You know, that said, you know, Nelson Cruz probably isn't it for me, but J.D. Martinez was being drafted like 24th overall last year.
Yeah,
we saw like kind of an injured J.D. Martinez for 2 months last year, and then bam, all of a sudden he's, you know, whatever, he's the 100th pick off the board now. There's a lot of upside there. You know, J.D. Martinez hit 300 with 40 home runs like every year for like 4 or 5 years. You know, leading up to this injured 2 months. So for me, J.D. Martinez, there's enough upside in drafting J.D. Martinez 90th or 93rd. What I can't remember what the number was.
Yeah, J.D. Martinez is pick 96.07. So if you think about it in a 15-team format, Brock, that's kind of middle of the seventh round. In a 12-team format, that's the 8-9 turn.
Yeah. They're pretty much going back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Your side of the coin would be J.D. Martinez. Me, in general, I don't think I want any of the four: Yordan Alvarez, J.D. Martinez, Nelson Cruz, and Giancarlo Stanton. And don't get me wrong, out of those four, Alvarez and Stanton are definitely, pretty much regardless of cost, they're both out of my window. However, J.D. Martinez and Nelson Cruz, I'm not targeting them going into a draft. I don't like that they're utility only. I don't like that they both provide pretty much zero speed. And, you know, Nelson Cruz is going to turn 41 in July. I know that the data just backs up his age and everything, but that is still something that's going to be in the back of my head. And I just think at that point in the draft, I'm definitely looking for something else. I know that power can come later, and the batting averages from both of those guys, sure, are going to be, we're hoping or projecting to be elite, and that's what the projection systems are showing, but it is somewhat of a volatile statistic, and I'm just not completely sold as I was in previous years with either of them. And so when it comes to that point in the draft, I'm probably just going to pass. But if it's an extra round and an extra round, then sure, I'm not going to just dismiss them.
So, Matthew, Brian Cashman was quoted a couple days ago, and I don't think this is a surprise to anybody, but he was quoted as saying he reiterated his comments after the playoffs last year that Stanton's going to be a DH-only player. We saw him just absolutely smash in the postseason last year with 6 home runs and 31 plate appearances. You're not buying in, it sounds like, regardless of that very small sample size?
No, because for one, it's a health issue for me. So we haven't seen him play, even in a shortened season, he didn't even play 50% of the games last year. And you know that I had an article come out about yep. Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton before last season. And I was still concerned about their health in a shortened season. And most people were willing to buy into, well, it's a shortened season. There's less amount of risk to be had because the season isn't as long, but they still both got hurt.
Yep.
And it's like clockwork with both of them. And so their size and just their muscle mass and everything in between is just not really built to play a full season of baseball. It wasn't even built for a 60-game sprint. So for me, it's just health in general.
Sure.
And on top of that, like, I don't really like to target guys that have a 30% K rate. Like, that's just not my cup of tea. So pass.
No, I get it. I mean, and the strikeout rate is, like you said, it's pretty horrendous with Stanton. The risk is, you know, obviously you get what you've seen the last two seasons, which you use a lot of draft capital or draft equity to get almost nothing in return. So totally understand.
And you're also not getting any stolen bases. And with Stanton in general, so if you're not getting stolen bases, and I'm definitely not buying in on a solid batting average, I don't think his batting average is going to murder you. But even in a full season, sure, the people that drafted him wherever he's going to go are going to brag and say, look at the power numbers I got and look at the counting stats, and all of that could be fine. But you could still be ass out on average and stolen bases. And that's in a perfect scenario. And so you're basically hoping for this 80th plus percentile season from Giancarlo Stanton in the 9th round or 8th round, wherever he's going. You know, it's 123, so... 8th round. Like I can, there's just a lot of more players in that bucket that I'm going to want.
Yep. Well, staying in the same team, Alex Colome was signed to a pretty cheap deal. 1 year, $5 million. I've, been an Alex Colome guy. Just he's boring. He doesn't strike out a lot, but he's fairly reliable. I would assume that he is now the closer over a guy like Taylor Rogers. But Brock, what are you thinking about the Alex Colome signing? Do you think it's a tag team approach with Taylor Rogers, or who's the man that gets the ball at the back end of games there?
Yeah, I think DC and Maddie touched on this a little bit in the last podcast, and I think everything that they said there kind of rings true, which was basically, Rocco Baldelli, the Twins guys, they're probably going to look to play the matchups with these guys, you know, Rogers being left-handed. And I think, you know, you guys were talking a little bit more about Tyler Duffy there, who's another guy that, you know, might figure in at the back end there at some point. But, you know, between Colome, Rogers, Duffy, you know, you've got, you know, 3 legitimate options there. One of them's left-handed. I think the saves are going to get spread around quite a bit. I think Colome definitely cuts into Duffy. You know, after Saturday's podcast with DC there, Matty, you guys had me sold on Duffy. I was going to end up, you know, in my draft champions leagues. I was probably going to end up, I got a couple guys, you know, late in the NFBC that I target, you know, kind of second in line type of guys. And Duffy was going to be added to my list there. He might come off the list now, but, you know, lists like, you know, Lou Trevino in Oakland, who's second in line behind a volatile guy like Jake Diekman. So Duffy probably comes off my list there. Colome isn't going to be able, you're not going to get him in that same, you know, 30, 35th, 40th round like you were going to get, you know, Taylor Duffy. So it's going to be a little bit of a tough sell for me for Colome.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Brock. Everything he did say is a head nod for me. Colome, his ADP is certainly going to just rise. It's going to float up and up and up and up. So don't even look at his ADP. If you're looking at his ADP, just scratch that off of your list. It's all hearsay. It's gone out the window. People are probably going to be overspending for him, if I had to guess. And then yesterday, a tweet came out from Dan Hayes, and it's pretty similar to what Brock just touched on. And Dan Hayes writes for The Athletic, and he kind of touched on the fact that Rocco Baldelli does not want to go with the old school approach and wants to have multiple closers. So when signing Colome and having Taylor Rogers and then adding Hansel Robles this offseason, Tyler Duffy has their best stuff. And then I also think the second best reliever is actually Cody Stashek. So that is five guys. If you are drafting in a draft champions, I would still throw darts at Tyler Duffy and Cody Stashek in the real late rounds. I mean, they're going after picks 400, 500, et cetera. And I would avoid overspending for Rogers or Colome. I would kind of just skip them and look for Duffy or Stashek. That's how I would kind of attack their market. And it almost seems like their reliever situation is kind of how I've been pounding the desk this offseason. Most people and all of them are very sharp, and they're not wrong in general. It's you draft, for the most part, yeah, you take the skill over the role. But when it comes to the closer, you take the role over the skills. But there's going to be a lot of situations like the Twins this year. Managers like Rocco Baldelli are going to say, okay, I'm going to go with a lot of guys. Right. But then, you know, at some point, it's like, okay, I'm going to go with the guys with skill. Sure, you can go lefty or righty if you want to do the split thing. But guys like Tyler Duffy, I think, are going to get their shot due to the skills and just the way that managers are running their bullpens these days. So it's going to be really interesting to see how teams are going to want to invest that that capital when it comes to high stakes live event drafts, because we just don't know about 2/3 of the teams right now. 2/3 of them can take this Minnesota Twins approach. And
yeah,
for me, I kind of like that. I'm embracing it and I'm opening it with, I'm having it with open arms. So
Matthew, if more teams go in that path, and we talked about this a lot last year, kind of like, owning a Tampa Bay Rays closer was a challenge, right? Does that affect your draft strategy at all, as far as will you invest more heavily in a Liam Hendricks, Josh Hader type early to lock in those saves, or is it just a mix and match kind of approach for you?
No, I'm not going to overinvest, because we've seen the data and the history behind that, and it just certainly doesn't back up investing that early of draft capital. If you're going to draft a third or a closer in the third round, fourth round, fifth round, it usually sinks your ship, and it doesn't, it doesn't have a fairy tale ending. So for me, I think this type of situation is just perfect for me. I'm wanting to draft the skills. I'm wanting some of these teams to have this shit show of uncertainty where we might have two or three guys. Like I've been just saying this over and over again about Nick Anderson and Diego Castillo. I want both of them. I want 2/3 at least of that pie, and I know that the skills are awesome. I know that the ratios are going to be good, and that the health history has been fine recently, and the strikeout rates are high. So for me, that's just kind of what I'm going to go about doing in general. And a lot of these guys that are the 8 to 10 pitchers, closers on certain teams, one of them's Kenley Jansen. Are we completely certain and sold on him? No, we're not. And there's a lot of guys that have much better skills waiting in the wings behind him. So investing early draft capital because he's the guy in an old school, mantra or he's got the role. I just, at some point, the leash gets shorter and shorter and shorter, and the skills do, they beat out the role. And especially now with all the analytics and everything, I'm going to be drafting skills over role this year, and I'm not going to over invest draft capital in role.
No, I totally get it. Brock, any different opinion for you on closers and how you look at the position?
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe taking the same idea, but taking it a step further. I think I want to be careful. Personally, I'm a little bit risk averse. I play a lot of draft champions leagues. And so, of course, there's an overall prize there. And, with a DC like that, with an overall prize, if you don't draft – if you can't get 80 saves, you're probably not going to win an overall, right? I think in leagues where there's no overall, and I'm just trying to win a league, I think that the strategy that Matt's speaking to is probably more along the lines of what I'd be doing. But for like DCs, things with an overall, it's going to be hard to skip out on those top guys and get to the end of the season with, I think probably target wise in a DC, you're looking at 80, 85 saves, and in years past, it's been 90. I think that number is going to come down a little bit this year. So I'm looking for a path to 85 saves. And, you know, for me, it's, you know, if I can get 85 saves by, you know, spending an earlier pick, I feel a little bit better about my chances of drafting a 30 homer bat, you know, much later in the draft than I do about, you know, maybe drafting 20 or 25 saves later in the draft. So I tend to pay for saves a little bit, but I like to look for upside as well. So the closer in Cleveland, James Karinchak, I really like him. He's going behind a couple other guys that have had, you know, closer jobs for the last few years, because I think the field thinks that those other guys are a little bit, you know, more safe. And Karinchak has, you know, rate statistics that are kind of jumping off the page there, you know, possibly, you know, best in baseball as far as relievers go. I kind of like drafting him because wherever he's being drafted, there's a little bit of upside there. I think Craig Kimbrell had a really bad start to last season, and the projections are really low on him and people are really down on him. And, you know, when you look at the way he finished last season, he looked like the old Craig Kimbrell. There's another one where you can get him a little bit later than some of those other guys, and you still have the upside of best relief pitcher in baseball. So I'm paying for saves, but I'm paying for saves that still have some upside there. You know, Josh Hader is probably not somebody that I'm going to have a lot of.
Yeah, I got to give some pushback, though. So with the James Karinchak situation, we have the skills, right? But you're paying for the role, but you're sounding as if he is the closer, and I'm just not completely sold on that, especially with the Indians and manipulating time and arbitration and everything in between. Yeah, so, like, he might not even be the guy. And so now you're overspending because you're hypothetically projecting or thinking that's the role, but now you're overspending for the skills. Whereas there's other guys that have all the skills. Like last year, Joe Jimenez, he was being drafted as one of the top 10 closers or something to it. And then in a bad 2020 season, which was short, things went wrong, you know, but like he's high pedigree, like arguably one of the best relievers last couple of years before 2020. And now everyone's going to dismiss him, and he's not even going to be drafted in a main event. In the first 30 rounds, he wouldn't even be thought of. Guys like Ty Buttrey, same thing, high pedigree, because Rossell Iglesias is there. Now we're just completely out on Ty Buttrey. But when Hansel Robles was the closer last season, everyone was still thinking and arguing that Ty Buttrey was going to be the guy. He's going to be the guy. I just think that there's so many high skill guys, especially with the team context, not so many teams aren't going to be buying into using that guy. He's the guy. I don't know, man. I think that I think Karinchak can be a landmine, and I had him last year, but I drafted him a lot late, like 20 rounds or whatever later, you know, where he's going now or whatnot. And, it's just, I don't know. It's a bad investment in my opinion.
That's a really good point with the service clock there. You know, if Karinchak goes out there and pitches the eighth inning and he's fantastic the next couple of years, arbitration isn't going to pay him anything. If he's pitching the ninth inning the next couple of years, arbitration is going to pay him a ton. The Indians are not going to be good. They don't really have a whole lot of reason to use him in the eighth or the ninth. It's not really going to matter for the Indians, and they've been, you know, obviously pinching pennies. That's a really good point with Karinchak.
The one, and I kind of shit on Kenley Jansen, our boy Brock, old faithful Kenley.
He's been declining.
Yeah, he certainly has. But to kind of push back on the point of on my own point, actually drafting, you know, skills over role when it comes to reliever this year, I would actually go on the opposite side and say, hey. So Kenley Jansen's current ADP over the last month is 136 with a min of 90, whereas Karinchak's is 108 with a min of 68. And I would say I would rather just draft Kenley Jansen's role over James Karinchak's skills. So it really is, you know, team dependent as well. But for the most part, when it goes later on in the drafts, yeah, definitely skills over role. But yeah, I would take Kenley over Karinchak, and trust me. Kenley Jansen is nowhere near the pitcher James Karinchak is, but I do have concerns about the role for Karinchak, and I think that he's going just far too early as a reliever to tickle my pickle, so they say.
Well, let's keep in that vein because I like, you know, we're talking strategy. And one thing that we wanted to identify or highlight, which I don't think is news, but it could be to some, the Major League Baseball Players Association officially rejected the owner's proposal on Monday, which I don't think came with a great surprise. Overall, there were some tenets to the proposal. They were going to delay the season by about a month, starting around April 28th. They were going to shorten it from 162 to 154 games, although they were going to be paid as if they were playing a full season. They would get to accrue full service time as well. There were also some ins and outs with the expanded postseason field like we saw last year with 14 teams. And also, probably the biggest thing that we want to touch on today is the universal designated hitter. As everybody remembers, the DH feels like it's only a matter of time before it comes to the NL, but currently there's only a DH when there's interleague play in an American League park or in American League games. So what we were hoping to tackle today was just talking about the impact the DH has. So if the DH isn't in play for the National League, and while there still could be some conversations over the next month or so, Maddie, let's start off with you. From a hitter perspective, what are you thinking hitter-wise is the implication? Obviously, there's less jobs to go around. Are there specific teams that you're maybe worried about in Milwaukee, a Cincinnati, or others in the National League that give you a bit of pause? How are you thinking about this? Because I know you've been posting some draft boards. You've got some drafts upcoming, obviously. What are you thinking as you know today about this lack of a DH?
So I'm in a Twitter group message with the Battle of the Podcast League, and I was the only person out of 15 teams. So I was one out of 15 that voted for there wasn't going to be a DH in the NL. And everyone thought I was fucking crazy. I talked to my high-stakes partner and FBC partner, Zach Betancourt. He thought I was always crazy. Now it's starting to gain some steam. And I actually like the DH in the NL. But I also like being right more than wrong. And I'm now getting to the point where I'm hoping there isn't going to be a DH in the NL just so I can say, hey, I was the one that was right. And it does have an impact. It has an impact on – I went through every team's projected starting lineups and kind of looked at the bench to see who could benefit or lack thereof. And the teams that I think it would benefit would be Cincinnati, so the Reds, the Padres, Rockies, Dodgers, Mets, Giants, Cardinals, and Nationals. So those are the teams in the National League that I think have extra pieces in play that – could benefit from it. And there's questions going on later on as to, you know, what are, and we'll get into that. But like for the Giants, for just a quick example would be somebody like Buster Posey. Now we've always dreamt of him. What if he just started playing more at first base? And that never really happened, right? He just kind of got his time off at catcher and every once in a while he'd play first base, but it never really came to fruition. And then last year when we finally had the DH, he took the time off. He's coming into his age 34 season. I think that rest could be a good thing for him. And if there was a DH, I think that that could be a benefactor for the Giants. So there's teams like that. There's teams like the Dodgers that just have pure depth. Teams like the Padres, pure depth. They just want to recycle and use guys over and over again, and they can kind of give them the days off in the field. It's all beneficiary to them. Washington with Kyle Schwarber, et cetera, Ryan Zimmerman. But with the Cincinnati Reds, it comes strictly to their outfield, and they have four guys playing three spots, and two of them are absolutely terrible when playing defense. So, and that's Jesse Winker and Nick Castellanos. So there's just so many different ways to dissect that. So if you're looking at projections, and if you are going to say, okay, there is not going to be a DH, you need to really, really understand and look at playing time, plate appearances, and at-bats, and all of that in between. On the pitching side of things, it's going to be a major bump for me. I have not even began to touch my starting pitcher projections because I'm wanting to wait on this. I was somebody that thought that there could be no DH. So for me, when you look at starting pitchers right now over the last month in ADP, Garrett Cole's going one. I think DeGrom's an easy push ahead of him, and I have DeGrom ahead of Cole with a DH. So there goes that. Then you have Shane Bieber as the third. But you look at the next, you know, few, and you have Yu Darvish, NL, Lucas Giolito, AL, Trevor Bauer, we don't know. Buehler, Nola, Castillo, Scherzer, Flaherty, Woodruff, Kershaw, Gallen. Those are all NL. These guys all have to get pushed up a bit. The huge question that I'm going to have is if anybody is a true high-stakes investor and they are going to be putting money on Shane Bieber or early in the starting pitcher market, if there is no DH in the National League, how are you going to reevaluate your projections and where does Shane Bieber go versus all those National League starting pitchers that I just mentioned? That's the biggest question mark for me right now, because Bieber's going third and that's it. And I think that there has to be a huge step back when we look at Shane Bieber if there is not going to be a DH. I think that a lot of these guys, like, give me already before this, but give me Aaron Nola, for example, over Shane Bieber. And then when you topple on no DH, it's not even a fucking competition for me. That's all.
Yeah,
I can say.
Matthew, I'm a terrible person, because when you said Ryan Zimmerman, I was like, what the hell is he talking about? Ryan Zimmerman's corpse is not Ryan Zimmerman signed a 1-year deal with the Nationals again in January.
He's so, back. Exactly.
I thought he was out of baseball. So shows what I know, Mr. Analyst. But Brock, what about you? How are you thinking about this, both from a hitter side and a pitching side, and as it having a big impact as you're either going through drafts or as you're starting to prepare for drafts?
As far as hitting goes, I really haven't dug in a whole lot there. I will say, just while Matt was speaking, he mentioned the Padres, and I thought that was interesting because, you know, nobody's old there. And so I pulled up the roster. I was taking a look on Roster Report, and you probably wouldn't guess it, but the old guy there is Tommy Pham. Yeah, he's almost 33, and the rest of those guys, you know, Hosmer's old, he's 31. Everybody else is pretty young. I was going to, you know, normally you look and, you know, talking about the DH, you know, who's the old guy? Who do we need to put on the bench? But Tommy Pham's the old guy there, and I don't really think you want to put him on the bench. So not sure what the Padres do there. As far as pitching goes, you know, that's I'm almost kind of hoping that there was a DH just because I, like Matt, already had DeGrom over Cole. You know, Shane Bieber is, you know, Bieber going whatever, sixth overall, seventh overall. You know, where Bieber's going, I don't really see that he has any upside there. You know, I think we've all seen, well, unless you haven't done any drafts yet, how quickly the ace pitchers are going this year in drafts compared to the last few years. It's becoming apparent it's going to be really hard to make a solid build without taking a pitcher in those first, you know, two or three rounds. And, you know, for me, DeGrom is just far and away the closest bet out of all of those guys. You know, so if I am getting a pick high enough to be able to get DeGrom, I'm definitely going to do that. I'm taking him over Cole. I'm taking him over Bieber. I'd be surprised if I end up with any shares of Bieber at all, just because, you know, a little bit of regression there, you know, having to pitch outside of the AL Central a little bit there. You know, I don't see a lot of upside from Bieber. So as far as the DH goes, you know, Matt makes some great points there. Those National League pitchers, you know, they're already ranked really high, and you're going to need a couple of them. And if anything, you know, that news is just going to have to push us up or push them up a little bit higher.
I also think one last thing I also think, too, is once we get, like, let's say after the first three, four or five rounds, when you get into Kevin Gausman and Charlie Morton and Pablo Lopez versus, let's say, Lance McCullers and some of the other AL pitchers, I think that for me, it kind of comes – the lazy approach to that would be going back to the old school ways of who pitches in the NL, who pitches in the AL. I'm going to go with the NL pitcher. I think that kind of would just – it would just simply be viable if you're too lazy to actually change your projections. I know a lot of people have already come out with their draft guides, their rankings, their projections. I'm really hoping that they're able to correct and fix some of those things, because – I'm like 99% certain all of these things, all those kits and guides and rankings and projections have come with it being baked in that there's just a DH on both sides. And that's kind of why I've waited mine out. And I'm doing my offensive side of projections right now. And I can easily go into the National League side of things and adjust a percentile of, you know, plate appearances per team. That's not an issue for me. But I don't think I'm going to be touching my offense or my starting pitching projections until I know what's going on, because it will play a role for me. It will. Like Marco Gonzalez versus even with Germán Márquez and Coors, like, dude, no, that's not, no. Give me Germán Márquez. Fuck out of here.
Brock, I have an affinity for Tommy Pham, not only because he was a Cardinal, but he's also now been stabbed twice. Do you give him any extra love because he's now been stabbed two times in his life? I mean, if you can survive your stepdad stabbing you and then outside of a strip club, you're a boss. I mean, guy's getting his at-bats for sure, feels like.
I'm not going to lie there. You know, somebody there is the common denominator. I'm not going to say who, but
I think it's the knife, Brock. It's not Tommy Pham. It's the knife.
It's the knife.
It's been the same knife both times, I believe, too. So.
Oh, my God.
Well, we got some good listener questions, I think, on the topic, too. So everybody's favorite fantasy baseball friend, Yancey Eaton, is a guy that had a good question that you kind of touched on, Matthew. So I was just going to ask you a little bit on this one. But so when you're looking at this position, right, and you're struggling to find guys because, you know, things could change. This pivoted a lot last year as we went around. Are there any guys late, I guess Matthew or Brock, post 200 or later, and Yancey brought up a good one. You know, Dominic Smith seemed to be a great beneficiary. He had a great year last year. But are there any later guys that you think really could benefit if there is a DH and that you're targeting as a sleeper? Matthew, could be an Edwin Rios type for the Dodgers, although he might be their third baseman if they don't sign somebody. Who do you guys like in that spot?
Well, yeah, so shout out to Sexpot Yancey Eaton. He was asking to name some players that were going outside of the top 200 as well. So when I pulled up that list and started to look, I kind of just started to scroll down, and each person kind of organically popped out to me. The first was A.J. Pollock, and that's simply because of his previous health history and the production that he provided last year and the depth that the Dodgers have. So if there is a DH, they're going to be able to give him more time off in the field. That helps preserve his health potentially. We've seen him, you know, break a wrist, diving for a ball, etc. So I think the DH would just overall benefit him when it comes to projecting his plate appearances. The next person is Jesse Winker, and we're going to be getting into that Cincinnati Reds outfield as a whole for our next question, but he's another person. Justin Turner, if he signs in the National League, especially if he signs with the Los Angeles Dodgers, again, the team depth, his previous injury history, he's just a pure hitter, so I think it would benefit him. J.D. Davis with the New York Mets, you touched on Dominic Smith. You also need to kind of calibrate Pete Alonso into that equation as well. And J.D. Davis is projected to play third base. I know that the New York Mets are still kind of looking for a third baseman. So I think that it would benefit just overall for J.D. Davis if there was a DH. You mentioned Edwin Rios. Even if they did bring in Justin Turner, that's why I mentioned Edwin Rios, because he could still get some at-bats as a DH, especially against right-handed pitching. He would benefit as well. And then I touched on Buster Posey a little bit earlier. And I think that he would legitimately get more shots playing DH when he is not catching, especially against left-handed pitching. And no one's talking about that because we were expecting all of these, you know, the DH to be on both sides. But if Buster Posey ends up getting these cheap DH stays, he should be getting drafted higher.
Yeah,
nope, all good names for sure. Brock, what about you? Anybody that catches your eye or that you're thinking about that Matthew didn't touch on?
Yeah, I only have a couple here, and one of them's kind of bringing up – I'm going to stray off topic a little bit here,
yeah.
I think, when I get there. But so my first guy that comes to mind there is Jock. You know, Jock Peterson's going like 400th overall or something, and it's probably ticked up a little bit since he signed with the Cubs there. But somebody kind of the same yeah. thing we talked about, Colton Wong, applies there. He plays in the National League Central now, and there's basically no – left-handed starters there, so I think Jock could go out there and set a career high in plate appearances. So, you know, when you can get somebody with that 40 homer power, you know, 400 picks into your draft, and
yeah.
you know, maybe he's going to get the most amount of plate appearances he has in his whole career, I think
love
there's
it.
A little bit of money to be made there. I like Brandon Nimmo. Brandon Nimmo is going to lead off for the Mets on the big side of the platoon. You know, he's
yeah.
not going to lead off against a left-handed pitcher there, and he's not going to help you with batting average, but he's not a zero with stolen bases. You know, Matt mentioned something along those lines earlier, and I'm totally with him there. I really hate drafting guys that are an absolute zero in any one category, and so Nimmo kind of fits there. if he's leading off for the Mets. And this is a little bit of a note about Francisco Lindor as well. Lindor, of course, traded to the Mets this offseason, going from a bad Indians offense over to the Mets offense. And I want to underline that, you know, only the Dodgers had a better weighted runs created plus in 2020 than the Mets. The Mets were, you know, they were a tick ahead of the Braves. They were two ticks ahead of the Yankees. The Mets offense was ridiculous in 2020. And so Lindor going from Cleveland, which, you know, I think the park shift is a little bit of a negative for Lindor, sure, as far as his home games go. But, man, if he's going to be, like, hitting second or third in that Mets lineup, one of the best lineups in baseball, Lindor's going to get back to, you know, scoring, you know, 120, 130 runs. You know, of course, you know, hopefully he's out there running on the base pass like he has in the past there. But yeah, sign me up for lots of at-bats from the top of that Mets lineup, including Brandon Nimmo.
You know what, real quick before I forget to say this, New York Mets, Los Angeles Dodgers 2021 NLCS.
Yeah, I like, especially mm-hmm. if the Mets sign Bauer. I think that's
bring it. Really I hope they do. I don't want the Dodgers to sign him. I'm on this whole prove it Tony Gonsolin and Dustin May train, and I'm fucking riding it. I don't care if off the track, but I'm here to prove something. There, and Bauer just you know, he kind of dilutes that point, and it kind of hurts both of those young studs. So I want Tony Gonsolin, aka Catman, and Dustin May, aka it, to get their shot.
One of those guys are going to be really good, and I hope we get to find out.
Yep.
So our next question, we talked about it a little bit, but it specifically was from Zach Wexman, a.k.a. Zach Roto from the Draft Champagne podcast. And I think, Matthew, he's the organizer of the Battle of the Pod league that you're in as well, correct?
That is correct. Yeah. Please feel free to follow him. He has two accounts. So he has at Zach Roto, and then he has the Draft Champagne podcast. So I'm not sure which he would prefer, so follow both. And his podcast is really good, the Draft Champagne podcast. He put together the League of Podcasts, and it was a 15-team satellite Draft Champions League, 15 teams, 50 rounds. And so he asked the question about the Cincinnati Reds playing time if there was no DH. I ran my projections and did it on plate appearances, and it goes like this for the four outfielders of Nick Castellanos at 653, Winker at 494, Senzel at 468, and Shogo Akiyama at 425. So I do like the list in order that it is going in. However, I think that there are some issues when it comes to Nick Senzel's projected playing time. He's had injuries in the past, and that's going to be baked in, which is fair. But I think overall, when you look at Castellanos and Jesse Winker, both of them are really, really bad defensively. And to just stick both of them out in the corners of the outfield every single day isn't going to work. And Nick Senzel is the one that I'm projecting or guessing and saying that it's going to be the center fielder over Shogo Akiyama. So anytime you get the Reds playing against a left-handed pitcher or a left-handed starting pitcher, Akiyama is just outright going to be out of the lineup. And then on top of that, it's going to propel those top three. I think Akiyama is the guy that's the least to get the burn. It's a really weird situation there, but I think Akiyama just basically plays against right-handed pitching is what would happen there.
Yeah, I think the hard part that a lot of people are struggling with is
trade Castellanos. By the way, real quick, sorry, Matt. Trade Castellanos, get him out. His defense isn't there. You guys want to shed money? You paid him a little bit. Other teams need outfields. Other teams can have a DH. Other teams need that bat. Go get somebody up the middle. You need a shortstop. Get rid of Castellanos for a fucking shortstop, please.
Okay. I can't say I disagree with you, but where I was going was on Winker, he was so on fire in the month of August, over 84 at-bats, 10 homers, and a .369 batting average, and then just ice cold in the month of September. That's plummeted his ADP outside that 200 mark like we were talking about. Brock, are you a believer in Jesse Winker and that sustained excellence that we saw for a month, or are you more thinking that the Reds give the playing time to Nick Senzel?
I like Winker myself. I was actually going to bring up that hot streak that he went on I mean, he was tearing the ball. He was basically one of the three or four best hitters in baseball for a really good chunk of that season there before he fell off. And if I think anything, you know, like the way that those guys fall off, we don't know what happens. We don't know if it's an injury. But what we do know is that we saw that hot streak. We saw the way that went. And we know that the skill's there. We know that the athletic ability's there. You know, Winker, you know, looking back at his strikeout rates leading up to last season, you know, 15, 14% or whatever, makes a lot of contact, definitely has power.
Yeah.
So we saw a lot of power there. I like Winker. I want to point out with Akiyama, he no home runs in 183 plate appearances. I mean, you know, who does that in 2020? Who does that in 2021? Like, we just don't have hitters like that anymore. That's a 052 ISO. I mean, I don't know how long that's going to play. I don't know. I think the other guys being so bad at defense is kind of helping maybe him stay in the lineup there. But I think that the answer is probably what Matt says. You know, you got to, you know, get rid of one of those guys and, you know, swap them out for, you know, get some better defense in that outfield.
Right. Yeah, I think people to your point, Brock, I mean, Jesse Winker wasn't kind of hot. He had a weighted RC plus of 224 for the month of August with a 1257 OPS. I mean, just absolutely absurd. 12% walk rate. And he did a great job the whole year with plate discipline. 13.6% walk rate in July. 20.6% walk rate in September and October. So he had the discipline. It just, I don't know if he got dinged up. It's tough because 60 games are weird samples. But I like the opportunity on Winker. I think the Reds also like Senzel. So I think they're in a little bit of a pickle. But Matthew, I think you're right. I think if Akiyama, he won't play against lefties. That'll be Senzel territory. And Brock, to your point, if he continues to struggle, I think they're going to probably throw the chips in and maybe give the job to Winker and see if he can take it and run with it. But I do think you're right, Matthew. A Castellanos trade would be interesting because they certainly have a need. I was really hoping Marcus Semien was going to be a Red. I thought that would be pretty interesting, but he'll be pretty fun with the baby Blue Jays as well. So,
yeah, and one last thing. The Winker splits, too. He finally got the opportunity, and he did quite well against left-handed pitching. So I don't think he's the odd man out against left-handed pitching either.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I want to note something, too. I am very frustrated with the Reds. I kind of gave them a real outside chance at a World Series run last season in the shortened season there. Preseason, I listed them as one of my favorite preseason bets. They were like plus 2,500 to win the World Series or whatever last year. I thought the odds of them actually doing it were much better than that. I thought they were a really good team. They, you know, had great starting pitching there, you know, Sonny Gray, Castillo, and they had Bauer. They had a really good team. That offense should have been good, and it wasn't good. I really wanted them to, you know, give it another try again this season, and they got into the offseason and started selling, and I don't think it was the right move, man.
You know, the fucked up part, and you're right, Brock, they did go to the playoffs, and, you know, they ran into a hot Atlanta Braves team. They still have Luis Castillo at the top. They still have Sonny Gray right behind him. They have enough depth, definitely, in the rotation with Anton and Michael Lorenzen, et cetera, and Wade Miley. And then the bullpen is supposedly stacked, you know, from all analytical standpoints, with it being an air quotes Cincinnati. And so Trevor Bauer wants a one-year deal. No one's going to fucking pay him his weirdness, except for Cincinnati's the only team that likes it. Trade.
Do it.
If there is no DH, you trade Castellanos for something that whatever helps benefit the team in real life, and you re-sign Bauer to a one-year deal, and you make a run. And if that were to happen, I'd say, fuck off, Mets. It's now NLCS Reds versus Dodgers. That's crazy to say, especially because the underperforming part of the Cincinnati Reds last season was the offense. You still have Mike Moustakas, and you still have a legit Jesse Winker. And if Nixon Zell can stay healthy. And Eugenio Suarez with his projected like 48 home runs from the Bad X or whatever. It's like, come on. You know, let's go. Let's. And I'm flying out to Cincinnati next weekend. And if I move there, I want an exciting baseball team. So fucking sign Bauer and trade Castellanos.
So one part I didn't read about this question, which I think people saw, was that Zach Roto put, Also, could you explain Senzel and Winker's plate appearances using as many F-bombs on air as possible? So, Matthew, I have to give you a shout-out. I mean, that was beautifully well done. The Matthew rants are the best part, Brock, of the podcast, and this was another really well-executed one. So, Matthew, love your passion. I actually think it'd be fun, too, for a really good Reds team, because that NL Central is going to be absolute garbage. They just have to try a little bit, and they're going to win that division, I think.
Easily. Yeah. I mean, who's in their way right now? The St. Louis Cardinals in their rotation? What is their rotation?
Kwang Hyung Kim is going to pitch every day, and then Adam Wainwright in his 70-year-old body is going to pitch a little bit,
too. So you have the corpse of Waino, which overperformed last year in the worst division of arguably all time in a short season. That's awesome that he was able to put together what he did. I'm okay with Kim. The ADP and draft capital on Jack Flaherty is kind of insane to me. And Rob Silver, and I don't have all the quotes for it, but if you are interested in hearing the different side or the flip side of the coin on Jack Flaherty, if you were willing to invest into an early to mid second round pick in a high stakes 15-team league, I'm sorry, go to Rob Silver. Google Rob Silver, or I'm sorry, on Twitter, search Rob Silver Jack Flaherty, and you'll see all of the little. Yeah, that too. And you're going to see a lot of little question marks with Jack Flaherty. And Rob does a great job of kind of bringing some of those things to light in general on players. And I wasn't necessarily in on Jack Flaherty at his cost anyways. And then when you dig a little bit deeper, it might have you scratching your head a little more. And then Carlos Martinez and Miles Mikolas. And this is the division that we're talking about is now projected to win it, right? Like the Cardinals are got to be the favorite after landing Nolan Arenado.
Yeah, either them or the Reds. I mean, everybody else is the Brewers are going to be kind of interesting, especially if Yelich bounces back, which I expect him to. But the Pirates and Cubs are awful. I mean, they're just going to be really bad. And who knows? I don't think the Cubs are done shedding payroll at this point. So they're going to be interesting, too. But yeah, it's a pretty bad division. But Matthew, you touched on something. And we have our last listener question before we wrap things up from Brian Vogel. Shout out to Brian, who's a really strong NFBC player. So this is one that's gotten a lot of attention, is a player with some helium when we talk about Jack Flaherty. Somebody similar, Zach Plesac. He is with an ADP of 63.61 since January 1st. He's the 19th starting pitcher off the board. So in a 12 or 15-team format, he's easily in that SP2 conversation.
Give me the
ball. I want you guys both to take a stand, yay or nay.
Plesac. Give me the floor.
Okay.
Do you mind, Brock?
Well, say it again.
Do you mind if I take the floor real quick?
Absolutely.
I want nothing to do with Zach Plesac at his cost, and especially if we are going to bake in no DH, fuck off. I don't want anything to do with you. I'm sorry. That's just how I have to. Yeah, no. And if you want me to back it, I can back it. But no, to put it simply, the draft capital is early fourth round, sometimes late third round. It's simply too rich. Simply too rich. The track record isn't there. I know that he made legit adjustments. Some of that can be true, but no, I can't do it. I cannot buy it. I'm sorry.
I mean, I think some of the gains are real. The control is very – he's had good control, and he took it obviously way up last year, right? But
yep. –
I don't know, Brock, what do you think?
Yeah, I think people are just, the way that Kluber left San Diego and Cleveland turned him into something amazing, you know, a couple Cy Youngs or whatever, the way that I think it feels like a Shane Bieber thing, you know, like last year everybody was kind of like, we don't really know about this guy, we'll see. And you know, there's a big difference between those guys and Zach Plesac, and that's the stuff. Bieber, fantastic stuff. Bieber actually had a full season of amazing numbers at the major league level. I mean, Plesac, even if you just took his minor league numbers and extrapolated them out to the major leagues, you know, without any kind of an adjustment, I don't think those numbers pay off his ADP. So. And unless we're expecting him to take a huge step forward at the major league level, there's no way he's going to return that value.
May I say, so Zach Plesac, well said, Brock, and I absolutely love what you said and agree, but going on average over the last month, he's the 19th starting pitcher on average, and that is at pick 56, which is shortly after going into the fourth round. So you're seeing right now, over just on average, 17 starting pitchers go in the first three rounds. And then you have Glasnow, Lynn, Plesac. It's just too much. It's just too much. We can push up only so much. If you continue to push up some of these guys, it just becomes where you're just hurting your own investment. So before we close out on the Plesac, I want to name pitchers that I would take ahead of him. Carlos Carrasco, Sonny Gray, Jose Berrios, Kyle Hendricks, Zach Wheeler. So that's just to name a few that I would either – that's actually cost aside. So, yeah, when you bake into the actual what you're having to invest, I just don't want anything to do with them.
Yeah, I don't disagree. At that point, I think I'm in the same place, Matthew, that I would be taking all of those guys as well. Now, it's interesting because there's some very vocal members of the fantasy community that are big time on board with Plesac. And don't get me wrong, I'd love to see him be awesome. I'm here for it. I hope he's great. It feels like a very rich investment, which just means I probably won't have a lot of shares of Zach Plesac this year, but that doesn't mean he's not going to be a really effective pitcher either. So time will tell, right? We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. I mean, people are hesitant on investing in Teslas and they're still trucking along. So they're doing okay. So maybe we're behind the times.
All right, boys. Well, it's been fun. Brock, first of all, thanks for joining us. We hope to have you on as often as you're able to make it. Anything you want to wrap up or that you're working on for the listeners or give a shout out to?
I definitely want to mention, keep an eye out on Twitter. There's going to be things from me popping up regarding baseball over the next couple of weeks. More stuff here at FTN. And I definitely want to give a shout out to the boss man, to Kevin, for bring me on over here to FTN. Give me that, first of all, give me that big shot over at Elite a couple years ago, and then keeping a spot ready for me over here at FTN. Just happy to be here hanging out with you guys and a bunch of other homies. I mean, that was another thing with FTN. When everything started popping off on Twitter, I'm like, man, this is like all the people that I've enjoyed conversing with over the last couple of years on Twitter. Everybody's going to end up over on FTN. So,
just pumped for to be sure. Here. Yeah.
Matthew, what's up for you, buddy? Guys. Projections. So, shortly, I will be announcing on Twitter once we correlate everything in the time.
Is this breaking news? Breaking news?
No, it's not breaking news. It's just – so we'll have – it's not a draft kit. It's not a draft guide. It's none of that. It's just – it's kind of our – it's going to be our season-long high-stakes fantasy baseball package, and it'll have my projections. It'll have a lot of our analysts' rankings and tiers. Everything will be color-coded for you by position. And then we're going to have per division a team-by-team breakdown kind of in an old-school way but on the internet, to where when you used to get your old-school magazine, you could flip to one team – and look at each position, who's projected to start, what's the projected starting lineup, what's the projected rotation, who's the closer, who's the who's waiting in the wings with the bullpen. And then each to next of those players will have their NFBC ADP with their min, their max. And then we'll go into, kind of a quick synopsis of that team, the layout, and then with a bust and a breakout per team. And then going into the season, we'll also have my Fab article, which will be out every Saturday or Sunday for all the NFBC players to dive into. And the cost of it is going to be it's really friendly to say it nicely, especially when you look at some of the other packages that go around and in some of these leagues and content and stuff. Yeah, so it's going to have a lot of stuff, and it'll also have just in general just random articles of draft prep, draft strategy, all of that stuff. It'll come with me, Matt Cufferly, Brock, John, Chris Meany, and so on and so on. So it's a really good group of guys. We're all talented, and I'm just excited to get it out there. But it's taking me a lot of time to get these projections done, but I'm scratching and clawing.
Well, if anybody, saw them last year, Matthew, they're very well done, very detailed. I'm looking forward to being a part of it again this year. I've got some stuff coming up at FTN with Matthew and Brock. We'll continue to podcast like we mentioned last week. We'll be going at least once a week. It's great to have Brock on the show. And, we'll keep pumping out that content and we'll see, you know, as we evolve with kind of what our topics are, we'll make sure to get the listeners involved. Thanks, listeners, for questions. It always makes it fun and lighthearted. And if you ask a good enough question, like Zach did, you get an epic Matthew rant, which is always fun to listen to.
I didn't realize that he was asking for cussing, but for whatever reason, it just
organically came out of you. I like it. We couldn't have scripted it anyway. So, for episode 29, yeah, thanks everybody for listening. Please, if you don't already, follow Brock on Twitter. It's Brock Nesmonster. Is that right, Brock?
That is absolutely correct.
And
I love that name.
And Matthew is at _MattyWood_. And I'm at MCutForLee. So hit us up, engage, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with the two Matts. Please rate, subscribe, and review the podcast, and we hope you listen again soon.